Bachelor, 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 live from Rogers Arena, calling Canucks games. It is Brendan Bachelor, Bachelor, Bachelor.
8:01 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Happy game day, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough for the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in Hour 3 of the program. Brendan Bachelor is going to join us in just a moment here to kick off Hour 3. Hour 3 is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec, that's what you're waiting for.
That's good energy, good energy. Good I energy, like it. Energy, I like it. Energy. No letdown for this show. No emotional letdown for this show.
We're on a steady high. Joining us now, he's going to be on the call tonight. A reminder, pregame, postgame, actual game, game two of the Canucks Preds series from Rogers Arena. Our next guest will be on the call. It's Brendan Bachelor here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Batch. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good. I'm going to sneak in a soccer question real quick.
Oh, perfect.
What was it like watching that game on Sunday?
I've never been more disappointed and frustrated to be going to a cup final is how I would describe it. Like,
that is very well said. Thank you.
Yeah. To blow a 3-0 lead, to have to go to penalties, to think that you'd lost it on the last kick of extra time until it was an inch offside. Like, I'm, you know, obviously you always want to have a chance for your team to win a trophy, but that was not the way I had envisioned that game playing out. And to be honest, I didn't watch the whole game because it was, you know, the morning of game one, I was running around doing things. And I checked the score as I was leaving the house to head down to the rink, and it was 2-0. And I was like, oh, great, that'll be fine. And I got to the rink and was like, oh, I'd better take a look and see what the final was. And it said 3-3 in the 98th minute. And I was like, oh, gosh. So that's what it's like watching Man United at this time of the year. But still exciting that they'll at least have a chance to lose to City in the FA Cup final.
To the 99% of the listeners who have no idea what's going on right now, Manchester United nearly lost to Coventry in the semifinals of the FA Cup, but Manchester United won that game. So let's use that as a segment or a segue into the Canucks talk. Manchester United might have an emotional letdown against City in the FA Cup final after that win over Coventry. Do you worry about that all for the Canucks after how much of a high they must have been riding after game one on Sunday?
Yeah, there certainly is the possibility of that. And, you know, once you have the 1-0 lead in the series, you expect the Predators to probably come out as the more desperate team, at least early in the game tonight. But the positive is that you're still on home ice and you're still going to have the energy of that crowd. And the energy was certainly palpable in game one. So, you know, even if there is a risk of that or a potential of that, I think from a Canucks perspective, you can ride the wave, ride the emotion, ride the intensity in the building, and that can help you get through what could be an emotional letdown. And the other thing is, you know, this team for the most part this year didn't have those kinds of letdowns. Like, it was very rare that, you know, we saw them, you know, really take a big step back after a victory. I think they were relatively consistent, even if they didn't always get the results in terms of the way that they played night in and night out. And this is where you fall back on the stuff that Rick Tocchet has been preaching all year, which is that yesterday doesn't matter. It's only today, and tomorrow doesn't matter either. So don't look ahead. Don't look back. Just focus on the task at hand. And this is a group that has had that workmanlike mentality all season long. So, you know, get through the first 5 or 10 minutes, I think, is probably the way that I would describe what they need to do going into this game, and then get back to some of the staples of the game that allowed them to come back and win game one.
Do you think Mikheyev's going to be back with Pettersson and Hoglander?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's funny because the traditional lines were less important than I think they have been all year long, because we saw the Lotto line put together in sequences. You know, we saw Pettersson get lots more even strength minutes than his line mates, you know, especially in the third period when they got the lead. You know, he shortened the bench and the lines were kind of in the blender a bit. So, you know, it's possible they move Mikheyev up. It's possible that Lafferty stays there. It'll be interesting to see. And, you know, we don't really have a good feel for that because they had an optional skate yesterday. I think it was only 9 guys went on the ice, and I think it's an optional morning skate again today. So I don't know if they're going to show us any line combinations till warm up, but, you know, certainly even if they move Mikheyev back to that line, it may not last long. It may be something they switch in game. And we know how Tocchet has been with those in-game adjustments, and I thought the Canucks were very effective in some of the things they changed in game one. So we'll see how they start, and we'll see how they finish too.
Who was the most impressive player for you for the Canucks in game one? Because there's a list of candidates there.
Yeah, Elias Lindholm, to me. This is the reason they acquired him, as Rick Tocchet said, and I thought he really elevated his game. Obviously, he scores the big goal, but he makes the crucial play on the forecheck to help set up the Joshua go-ahead goal. And just the little things he did throughout the game, you know, a key face-off win here. That line was pretty effective in sort of half of the matchup against the O'Reilly line, where it was either them or the Miller line that got that matchup. It wasn't something that Rick Tocchet was chasing a specific hard matchup against that line. And, you know, that Lindholm line fared well in those minutes. So a large part of that, obviously, is Joshua and Garland and how well they play. But I think Lindholm is finding a home between those two guys, and his high hockey IQ allows him to, you know, complement them both very well, and not just complement them, but add to that line. And I certainly thought he did that in game one.
Hey, Batch, you listen to the show from time to time. Are we too hard on Petey?
I don't think so. I think there are big expectations for this player, in part because we know what he's capable of. And this is something that I can remember, you know, hearing from multiple people in the past at all levels of hockey. Like, I can remember talking to people about this, especially when I was working in the WHL, where, you know, coaches are working with young players and consistency is an issue. But once you show your coach that you have a certain level, then the bar changes for you in terms of an expectation that you can reach that level more consistently. And Pettersson has been an elite player, an elite producer, and a very strong play driver and two-way player in this league during his career. And so I think it's reasonable for people to expect that he can be that guy. He's about to be compensated very handsomely for the body of work that he's put up to this point, and he needs to be more of a difference maker for this team. And that doesn't necessarily have to be in terms of points production, because the Canucks, you know, are a very deep team that can get offense from throughout their lineup. But even Rick Tocchet yesterday talked about how that line's got to be better on the forecheck, and it's fine to, you know, make skill plays, but you have to go and get the puck first. So, you know, that's not necessarily a direct shot at Pettersson. It's a comment on how that line played in game one, but they're going to need him, and they're going to need him to be a difference maker and, you know, help tilt the ice, whether he's putting the puck in the net or whether he's winning his matchup or driving play, or however you want to describe it. And, you know, he can certainly do a better job of that than he did throughout most of the second half of the season. And, you know, a better job than he did in game one too.
It's also the opportunity that's being presented to the Canucks right now. We don't know if they're going to have Lindholm in the lineup next season, but right now you watch, you know, I think for me, JT Miller might have been the most impressive player in game one. I know Lindholm was good and Dakota Joshua was the first star of the game. And, you know, I don't have a huge argument with that. Thatcher Demko made a huge save. But the way Miller is playing right now, Besser was good as well. So you got that line that absolutely dominated in game one. And then you've got Lindholm with Garland and Joshua. Imagine if Petey can find his game, and, you know, his wingers are going to have to contribute as well, and his wingers are going to have to keep up and do some good things as well. But look, the Canucks can really make a deep run if they get Pettersson going. That, you know, that depth and that quality of depth, there aren't many teams in the NHL that have that.
Yeah, and I think the opportunity is there, certainly while they're on home ice, to get him some favorable matchups and get him into opportunities where, you know, maybe he's not facing Josi and McDonough or not facing the O'Reilly line. And, you know, those are the kind of matchups or the edges that you can create that make the difference between winning and losing a game, winning and losing a series, and, you know, winning or losing deep in the playoffs and potentially going on a run. So that puts onus on Pettersson that, you know, if he's not out there against the top players of the other team, he's not being used in a matchup role, then you've got to make the most of the matchup that you get. And if you have opportunities to play Nashville's third or fourth line, then something positive has to come out of that. You can't just punt on an advantage that you're able to create with the depth in your lineup. So as much as, you know, you might think, oh, that takes the pressure off him a little bit because he doesn't have to perform against top players, you know, I think the pressure may even be heightened in that sort of scenario at this time of the year, because oftentimes the top lines sort of cancel each other out, and it's who has the better depth and can produce throughout their lineup that has the most success. And certainly the Canucks were able to do that without the contribution of the Pettersson line offensively in game one, but it's not going to be that way in every game in this series or every game in this playoffs overall. So, you know, and I should say, I don't think Pettersson was awful by any means. Like, we're talking about how he needs to be better. I don't think he was bad necessarily, but again, it's about knowing what he's capable of and having that high expectation for him as a guy that could be a real difference maker that we haven't seen really in the last few months.
What alterations or differences are you expecting to see from Nashville this evening?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I know they tweaked some of their lines in the bottom six, and you know, that was a little bit effective in terms of some of the changes they made. I'll be interested to see, because they had the McCarron line, and I know Drantz has talked about this quite a lot, that they had the McCarron line out there against the Miller line a lot, and they seemed content with that, like they weren't trying to get away from that matchup as aggressively as you might expect. So does that change in game two, or is that part of their game plan that, you know, they have trust in that line and they're okay with that? And, you know, I guess it remains to be seen. But, you know, my overall takeaway from game one was that the Canucks' depth really came through and they look like the deeper team than the Predators. So what does Andrew Brunette do to try and counter that? I think Nashville's top players have to be a lot better. Forsberg was quiet. Yoshi was quiet. Saros didn't have a good game, certainly when you look at the Lindholm goal in particular. So the Predators will be looking for more from their top players, and, you know, we'll pay attention to some of those tactical nuances as the game carries forward. But this is the beauty of playoff hockey, and this is what we've been missing, is now it's about what do the Predators do to adapt? How can the Canucks counter whatever changes they do make? And that's the fascinating part of playoff hockey, and it's what I'm looking forward to sinking my teeth into tonight.
Yeah, and I know they didn't skate yesterday, so no word if there'll be a lineup change or anything. But I didn't even realize, like, their healthy scratches include Tyson Barry, Cody Glass, and Dante Fabbro. Like, they've got some pretty notable names that aren't in the lineup right now.
Yeah, so, you know, they certainly have opportunities, especially on the back end, to make changes. Like, Spencer Stastny's a young defenseman that they've liked and had in the lineup, but you have some more veteran savvy and playoff experience in a guy like Tyson Barry. You know, both Barry and Fabbro are BC guys, so, you know, they would be motivated to get into the lineup. So I'll be interested to see if Andrew Brunette thinks either of those guys can provide a spark for the Predators. And, you know, I really look, again, as I said at the start of this game tonight, you know, Nashville's going to come out motivated after dropping game one. Canucks need to try and ride the emotion of the crowd. And, you know, it was good that they came from behind, you know, a couple of different deficits in game one to win. But we know that a large part of their success this year has been a front running team that scored first more than any other team in the NHL and won more games when scoring first than any other team in the NHL. So, you know, the Canucks would make it easier on themselves if they can start the game well and get the first goal, and then you can go from there.
Batch, thanks for doing this, bud. We really appreciate it. Have a good call tonight. Should be a good game. We'll do this again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, boys.
Thank you. Brendan Batchelor, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks, right here on Sportsnet 650, also on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Okay, so Ryan Kessler is going to join us in about 15 minutes, so our traditional schedule is a little mixed up. So what I want to do right now is print off the submissions into the Dunbar Lumber text line for what we learned, and we'll read some of those submissions. Then we'll talk to Ryan Kessler, And then if there's time after the Kess interview, we'll read some more submissions.
What We Learned Humanoid Edition is brought to you by Get Fire Plan. Protect what matters most with comprehensive fire safety plans, monthly audits, and risk mitigation at $200 off. Visit them at GetFirePlan.com.
Oh, my God! We're having a fire
plan!
Basketball Phil is going to kick it off, but in non-traditional form. It's with an Ask Us Anything. Yeah, that's right. On a Tuesday.
He's going to tip it off because he's Basketball Phil.
Very well played, tip Greg. Who gets the last shot for Canada at the Olympics in Paris? If Shade Gilgeous-Alexander and Jamal Murray are both there, we have arguably the best backcourt in the world if Murray is healthy and available. The reason Basketball Phil is asking this is because yesterday, the Denver Nuggets and Jamal Murray were tied with the Los Angeles Lakers 99-99 with time running down on the clock. The ball was in Jamal Murray's hands. I thought maybe they'll run a pick and roll with Nikola Jokic and Jokic will get the last shot. Jamal Murray said, no, I'm taking this. I'm going to take this one-on-one with Anthony Davis, who, by the way, said that he should be the defensive player of the year. Jamal then took a 15-foot step-back jumper, and then this happened.
Denver with the timeout. We are tied.
I love it. Don't call it. Tie ball game. Worst can happen. We go to overtime. Murray makes a move. There's a
the Nuggets have won!
That was their first lead of the game since they led 5-3 in the opening minute. They were getting annihilated. They were down 20 to LeBron and the Lakers. And then Jamal Murray, who was having a bad night prior to that, he hit the game tying shot, came down, step back, boom. Game winner, go Canada, Nuggets up 2-0. The defending champion Nuggets now up 2-0 on the Lakers.
How much does Canada's men's basketball team being at the Olympics change your excitement level for the actual Summer Olympics?
Huge.
Yeah.
I used to just be a synchronized swimming guy. Now I'm a basketball guy.
I was always an archery guy. Big archery guy.
I love archery.
Yeah. For me, the Summer Olympics is actually not that big a deal. I know that may be surprising to some of you. They're like, you're a sports guy. Don't you like sports? I'm like, yeah, but I don't really care about track and field.
Without being too dismissive of all these people's hard work. There's a lot of fluff. There's a lot of fluff.
No, it's not the fluff.
Olympics.
It's not the fluff.
A lot of fluff events.
No. Yeah, do not attribute that to me.
A lot of fluff events.
I mean, there's breakdancing, but
see,
but for
how
me,
dare
it's,
you speak poorly of
it's just not like I don't follow track and field. I don't. What else is there? Like, you know,
many sports.
Yeah. But
pool,
swimming.
There's no fluff in the Olympics of all the sporting events that I cannot name.
Honestly,
men's hammer.
Hey, we're killing it in hammer.
Ethan Katzberg set a world record, by the way. I should mention that.
Did he?
A few days ago. Yeah.
So that'll be cool, but I'm not staying up awake at night just being like, man,
speak for yourself.
Hope we can win the hammer toss at the Olympics, right?
Like, I'm on the cat's train, man.
Like swimming to me, don't take this the wrong way. I think it's really impressive when people can swim fast and I'm the worst swimmer in the world, so maybe it's jealousy, but for me, watching swimming is just like, it's so boring, man. It's so boring. You're like, they're not going fast because they're swimming.
Right.
You know, so that makes a difference to me. I have no interest in it.
You need if they run.
These people train their whole lives.
Yep, good for them.
You just shut them down.
No,
like that.
It's just not for me.
If you put them in a pool with like a dolphin or like a cool shark, then we're talking about something.
Yeah.
Say a cool shark?
Yeah.
One that wouldn't eat people?
One with freaking laser beams attached to it.
An Olympic trained shark that wouldn't eat people?
Give me a hammerhead. They look cool.
I'm not trying to be insulting to the swimming people out there.
Definitely misfired on that.
Why?
Because that was incredibly insulting to the swimming people.
That I'm not entertained by watching swimming. Even they'd be like, I like to swim, but I don't like to watch swimming.
I doubt they would.
Really?
What about diving?
What about diving?
Is that fun to watch?
Not especially.
Not really.
Okay.
I don't like judged events either. And there's a lot of judging in both Olympics.
You're a pretty judgy guy. I'm surprised you
judging in this segment.
No, I don't like judged events. It always comes down to like, what do the judges think? Right? You're like, I disagree with that. So
figure
like,
skating's out the window.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Learn a lot about
how'd you do that in hockey? I disagree with that Canucks loss.
The judge said.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I don't know.
So instead of a offside challenge or like going to a video board, if the NHL started doing a judged thing where they put the score,
not a penalty, you wouldn't be happy with
it. Can you imagine if they played an entire game, they didn't keep score, but at the end everyone was just like, who do you think played better?
Yeah, who played better?
They just go by expected.
These guys look like they tried harder. Give them a 10.
Trey, the Gulf Island ferry worker with a What We Learned, hashtag WWO What We Learned, after Bo Horvat and the Islanders' epic collapse last night. It's clear we can blame Bo for all the epic Canucks collapses last season. I'll tell you that for free. As soon as the Islanders blew that lead, Bruff texted, Horvat's team can't hold onto a lead ever. Like, I was like, well...
He didn't have his man on that play.
As far as I could tell on a couple of viewings of the replay, I think he was responsible for tying up Aho, and he did not tie up Aho, and that was the 3-3 goal.
Mm-hmm. Zach from Langley, What We Learned, some media outlets thought that the Canucks playing U2 for their skate-out song was a troll job because of the Preds Vegas fiasco. I think Kessler being in town is a bigger troll towards the Preds. Go, Canucks, go. So,
yes,
couldn't part of the decision to go with Streets Have No Name have to do with the Preds, or was this always the plan?
So that's,
would they have done that if
I
the
think
Canucks,
the Preds part was very minor? It was it's the history of the song with the team, as you know.
So do you think they always plan to do that?
Yes.
You know how we always say on the
show.
Do
you have confirmation on that?
My source is, trust me, bro.
Both of you stop talking. You know how we always say on this show, like, we try and paint the full picture, and we try and explain, like, the nuances and the subtext and the context and everything. No one really did a good job of that explaining the U2 thing, because some people were like, well, U2's always been their intro music. And I'm like, yes, but they brought it back. So what people are saying is, like, yes, it existed before. Are they bringing it back as a sort of, you know, low-key digging at what the National Predators
now
are.
See,
or
would,
do they always plan it to do
what
this?
Would be the right, ultimate
for the playoffs.
But no one explained it in those terms, so everyone just made it this really sort of like, you're an idiot, the Canucks always did this.
What would be the ultimate troll job is if they brought in Bono to sing the national anthem. Now that would be a troll job. Mm-hmm. If the Canucks could get Bono, we win this series.
Yeah, I don't think so.
What?
Go with me on this one.
I don't know.
I'm not going
Bono.
With you.
It's Bono.
I know who Bono is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Wears the sunglasses. Singer.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Greenpeace guy.
He's just inherently funny. Just, you know. Bono.
Yeah. I don't know one name. That's fine.
That would devastate the Preds.
No, but so the issue that's raging, I don't think it would. They were
sweet. We finally got to see him.
There he is.
Devastate the Canucks.
This is awesome.
We're fired up.
Oh, crap. It backfired.
If anything, not seeing him in the first place inspired them. Like, hey, don't want to bring him out. Who knows what that's going to do?
I like this, what we learned from Kevin on the road. What we learned, the Kings can't beat the Oilers. The Oilers can't beat the Canucks. The Canucks can't beat the Kings. I'm confused.
I was a little surprised last night. I thought that LA's vaunted 1-3-1 wasn't going to get...
They need the lead, though.
True. But they, like...
But
I
they've had leads
game.
Before against the Oilers, and the Oilers just... like that. But that's the thing.
It was actually the Kings that kind of... And I stress the word kind of made a comeback.
Yeah. I
mean, they made it 6-4.
Shockingly, the 1-3-1 doesn't work against McDavid. Okay, everyone, get the 1-3-1. Oh, and McDavid's already passed.
Yeah.
He had a spinorama on the first one where the pass wasn't even that accurate. But the spinorama just threw off everyone so thoroughly.
Yeah, that's a hilarious game plan against McDavid. What if we all just stood there in the neutral zone?
Oh, there he goes.
Stroking my beard. I'm like, you know, it just might work.
Sure, he goes fast, but if we stand still, it might throw him off.
We can throw our sticks at him, right?
That's true.
No, you can't do that. Ooh, this is going to be a lot tougher then. Yeah. Ryan Kessler is going to join us next on the Halford and Bruff Show. Ryan Kessler is who's really synonymous with the Nashville Predators in this town. We'll talk about his memories of that series and maybe ask him if he had any advice for the Canucks heading into Game 2, what would it be? And then if we finish our interview with Kessler a little early, then we'll read some more What We Learns into the Dunbar Lumber text line. It's game day on Halford and Bruff on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Big Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
is Jayhawk. The set play drops it off for Henrik Sedin with some speed. Kessler moves in and shoots. He scores! What a goal! Ryan Kessler has been the best player in the series. Just put Vancouver ahead 3-2.
8:32 on a Tuesday, game day Tuesday. Get fired up, everybody. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. Ryan Kessler, who you just heard in that clip, 13 years ago, ripping the hearts out of Nashville. And very fittingly, the Canucks are now playing the Nashville Predators tonight, 7 o'clock from Rogers Arena. Pre-game, post-game, actual game, all right here on Sportsnet 650. As I mentioned, we are in hour three of the program. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. Game two of this first round series goes tonight. We're very excited. The fans are very excited. Very excited to have our next guest on the program. Former Canuck Ryan Kessler joins us now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Ryan. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Well, we're good. Thanks for taking the time to do this. We appreciate it. So for the listeners that don't know, you're back in Vancouver. You're here now. What's it like being back in Vancouver, not just being back in the city and everything, but at a time where the Canucks are finally got playoff hockey back in the city, first time in 9 years?
Yeah, it's awesome. I got in late last night and waking up. You can, you know, even last night I brought my son with me and he's like, there's people still in the streets. I'm like, just wait till tomorrow. He doesn't remember much from my time with Vancouver other than maybe playing mini sticks in the locker room. But the chance for him to see the atmosphere and everything that goes into playoff hockey, and he can kind of not relive, but kind of see what the best years of my career and the atmosphere looked like inside that building is going to be something special for me to see and for him to see.
I suppose it's a bit of a double-edged sword playing in a city like Vancouver that takes its hockey so seriously. Were there ever times where you were like, I wish I was somewhere else, but also, yeah, but like imagine what it would be like to play somewhere else that doesn't care about hockey as much as they do in Vancouver?
Yeah. I would say to your first point, do I wish I was somewhere else? When you're in it and you're successful, it's great. When you're not and you're struggling and you're having a hard time trying to find your game, you know, you got to be mentally strong because, you know, it is everywhere. You know, even turn on TV last night, all there is hockey. But in America, you can barely find hockey on the TV. So I loved my time here, and it was a great time in my career, and we were successful, and to be able to play in a Canadian city, I think every player should do it once, at least. There's nothing compared to it, and especially during playoff time. You know, I was watching the Canucks game the other night, and you know, just hearing that national anthem still gives me chills, and seeing them go across the blue line and seeing all the you know, JT Miller's face standing on the blue line, you know, you know exactly how they're feeling, and you know, to be honest, it might actually get them too pumped up for the game, and I could run through a wall after that national anthem, that's for sure.
You bring up a great point there, is that when Jason talked about double-edged swords, there is a double-edged sword to the excitement because you've got to embrace it and enjoy it and appreciate it, but you also have to deal with it. Like, you have to handle that amount of energy and not kind of like lose your mind. What advice would you give to the guys that are now going to go, some of them for just the second time in their careers, between how do you handle and embrace it and appreciate it, but also deal with it?
I think once you get on the ice, you know, the fans do bring that energy, right? But you can't play out of your game. And I think that's where the veterans come in, right? They steer the ship the right way and really keep things even keeled. But saying that, playoff hockey is a different animal. And, you know, I'm sure all the boys are starting to realize that, or at least they realized that yesterday when they woke up, probably more sore than they've ever been after a hockey game because of how physical it is and how you literally leave everything out there every shift. But saying that, everybody plays banged up. But I don't know what his slogan is, but it is true. You got to embrace the pain. You got to enjoy it. You got to go out and you got to strive for it and wear it as a badge of honor almost. And if they do that, they'll be just fine.
You played 101 games in the playoffs, including a few deep runs with the Canucks and the Ducks. When you've got a series lead, even if it's just 1-0, how difficult is it to maintain that sense of desperation when you're ahead like the Canucks are right now?
Well, I think the message in that room is going to be we have to defend home ice because they get one and they did their job. And that's what Nashville's saying over there is all we came in here for was one. If we got two, great. But if we get one, we're going back to home ice with an advantage. So I'd say, you know, the Canucks found their game later in the first game. And if they just come out with that same urgency they did in the third period, they'll be just fine.
We're speaking to former Canuck Ryan Kessler here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Ryan, when the Canucks booked this playoff appearance and we knew that it was going to be Nashville, the first thing, like both Brough and I said, we're like, oh, it's like, you know, remember the Kessler series. That's actually how that 2011 series is referred to. And it's been referred to in a couple of times as people have talked about it. In that series, you had 11 points in six games. And I remember Barry Trotz in the aftermath said, you know, Kessler was the difference in the series. Be honest with me. Was there a point in that series where you were going and you were cooking and you knew, like, they're going to have a hard time stopping me? Did your confidence level reach that point because you were basically a 2-point-a-game guy in the six games?
Yeah, I think my confidence level in that series, I don't think I've ever touched it again in my career. I knew if I stepped on the ice, you know, we were going to make something happen. And I knew if I had a chance to shoot, you know, I most likely it was going in. And confidence is a funny thing. And, you know, I think during that cup run, we had a lot of different guys step up. And, you know, we had guys step up in the Chicago series and then, you know, the Nashville series. And you look at San Jose, you know, how well Hank, Danny, and Burr played and how close that series was. And then we were just too banged up to bring it home. But, yeah, back to your point, my confidence level was unreal. I can't really explain it in the words. But the ability to be a difference, because every player wants to be a difference in a series, right? But to have that, you know what, I'm going to be the difference is a different mindset.
Is that a mental thing or a physical thing? Like physically, did you just feel like you were skating unbelievably and you were going to win every battle, or was it more a mental thing?
I think it's both. I think physically you got to feel good, and when you physically feel good, mentally, you know, things start to come around confidence-wise. And that's what happened with me. You know, I felt like I was able to play more offensive that series than the first series going against Taves and Kane and all them. And I could kind of not cheat, but anticipate a little more on the offensive side. And as soon as Erhoff gave me that one in the crease on the power play, it was like, all right, here we go. And it just kind of snowballed from there, and I continued the momentum.
When you think back to your time in Vancouver, how often do you think about just the good times you had with your teammates as opposed to the actual games being played on the ice?
Oh, all the time. We had such a good group of guys. You know, the guys I played with the most would be, you know, Hank, Danny, Bird, Juice, the Sedins, Edler. And then we brought in guys like Higgins and Baholtra and Raffy and, you know, Hamuse and Keith Ballard and Christian Ehrhoff. Like, we had such a tight-knit group. And, you know, having Louis and Jason Garrison, all those names just bring back such good memories.
How much did that help when things, I don't want to say weren't going well, but when you were facing pressure, when you were facing big games, when there might have been some criticism of the team, how much did it help to have a tight room? Because we've been talking about, you know, the Canucks in their evolution in the last few years and how, you know, Rick Tocchet has really leaned on the leadership group. And he actually said when he came in, he said, yeah, I think it's a bit of a quiet group, so we need to change that a little bit. It just seems like there, I'm not saying like there were issues in the room. It just seems like we hadn't heard until more this year. We hadn't seen them having as much fun with each other as you guys seem to have.
Well, winning's fun. And I think if you have a group that cares about winning and you're not successful, it's not fun to go to the rink. To be honest, our 2011 group was quiet too. You know, we brought in some leadership and, you know, Manny coming in, but the leadership core, we were never rah-rah guys. We, you know, when Hank said something in the room, people listened, but, you know, we knew what we had to do each and every night and we'd go out and do it. And I think you need guys to buy into their roles. I think you need guys to give up their body, especially on the PK. You need a good power play, which they have. And you need good goaltending, and they have one of the best in the game. So I'm ready for a deep run here, and hopefully this isn't my my last time back here.
We're speaking of former Canuck Ryan Kessler here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. You mentioned that you're back in the city and you're back in town. The way that you left Vancouver, let's be frank, like a lot of people, it left a bad taste in their mouth. Now, if you were to, because there's people listening, tens of people listening right now to the Halford and Brough Show. If you were able to just tell the people either something that they got wrong or they didn't know, or even that you just wanted them to know about how you left Vancouver, what would that message be?
You know, I think when you're young, you make mistakes. Looking back on it, you know, I really wanted that cup, and I felt like our time was over in Vancouver, and you know, there was some things that happened that kind of pushed me out. But saying that, I wish I could do it over again, because nothing compares to my time in the city, and you don't know what you have until it's gone. And you know, my son was born here, my family was growing up here, and the people you leave are the people you miss the most. And you know, I just wish I could do it over again.
What would you do differently? Not to dig into this too much, but you know, I think people are interested in this stuff.
You know, it's a tough question. What would I do differently? In the time, I'm so competitive, and I wanted to win that Stanley Cup so bad. You know, you get a taste, and it's right there, and you lose in a game seven, and then the next year you get back, and you get back in the playoffs and get swept. You know, it feels so far away, and I just thought a change of scenery was going to be good for me. And I'm not saying that it wasn't, but it never gave me a chance again. And looking back on it, you know, you leave people that and teammates and friends that, you know, you wish you had more time with them now, that's all.
Well, Ryan, I want to say this on behalf of Jason, myself, everyone listening, the guys behind the booth doing the producing. I'm really glad that you're going to get to experience this, and I'm really, really glad that you and your son are going to get to experience this together. It's very cool. You know it better than anyone what it's like to be in that building. So thank you very much for doing this. Enjoy tonight, and hopefully this will be a long playoff run for you and your son to enjoy.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it, too. That's Ryan Kessler, former Vancouver Canuck here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. So Ryan Kessler's in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. He's here with his kid. He's going to be at the game tonight. It could be a very cool, special evening, as if it wasn't going to be already at Rogers Arena.
I think we need to talk about the question you asked him and his response to that. I mean, that is some regret that he's expressing there.
Yep. And I've heard other not to like minimize what he said, but I've heard in other interviews him have that same sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that he loves the way that his time ended in Vancouver and how the legacy was altered mm-hmm. for a guy that, remember, we're talking about the Nashville series. What was the first thing we said? Hey, they played them in 2011. That was the Kessler series. There's not a lot of guys in Vancouver Canucks lore that have a series mm-hmm. that they're that identified with.
See, I never blamed him for looking at the state of the Canucks and going, I've got a better chance of winning a cup elsewhere. Now, I admired Kevin Bieksa, I suppose, for his attitude, which was basically, and I think he was quoted as saying this, if the ship's going down, I'm going down with it. And ultimately, the Canucks were the ones that went to Bieksa and said, we need to get some assets for you.
But you're missing the two key foils in this, mm-hmm. and that's Daniel and Henrik Sedin, is they were Canucks until the bitter end, right?
Yeah.
That's not fair to Kessler.
Mm-hmm.
You can't always be beholden to other people. Like, people make their own choices and people make their own decisions, and I get what you're saying. He made a choice because he wanted to go win a cup.
Well, Brandon in Vancouver, I think, gets it. He texts in, he says, sounds like it's the friendships and relationships he misses most. And that's what it sounds like to me. Like he said, like, I didn't know what I had until it was gone. And then, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he goes down to Anaheim. And they had some good teams, and they played some really hard series and, nearly made
the
Stanley Cup final.
That
series they played against the Chicago Blackhawks in, I guess it was 2014, was one of the all-timers. Now, unfortunately for Kessler, he was on the losing end of it again. And maybe on the runs with Anaheim, it was kind of like, this just isn't the same. Like, this isn't the same as in Vancouver where I had all these friends and relationships and the city was like wildly into it. This is the Anaheim.
Orange County.
Yeah.
Well, also, why I asked him about the Nashville series, and my question for those that missed it was pretty much like, did you go out there being like, no one's going to stop me? That's what I wanted to know.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I framed it. And that's basically what he said. So it's also part and parcel with the emotional connection and the friends and everything. But also, you were the man. You were playing the best hockey of your career. You mm-hmm. were winning a Selkie. You were scoring 40 goals. You were a key driver on one of the best teams in the NHL. I mean, that's got to pull out the heartstrings too. Like, when you look back, you're like, where were the best years of my professional career? Not your life. Because there are life moments that aren't about, what you've accomplished, for lack of a better term, right? Your professional career, a lot of people take that as a source of pride. A lot of people, it's their identity, mm-hmm. right? Now, I'm not saying that's the situation here, but think about it. Think about the perfect storm that was 2011 for him. You had an elite team playing in a frenzied market that was starved,
mm-hmm.
starved for a Stanley Cup. And you were a guy that, and again, without hyperbole, like single-handedly won a series. That is some stuff that's going to, like, I'm not surprised why Ryan Kessler was like, I miss it here.
Mm-hmm.
I
mean,
this was the place where my family grew up and my son was born and, he had his best times.
I also got his desire to win a cup because I think it probably went beyond losing game 7 in the Stanley Cup final. There was another big game that Ryan Kessler was a part of in 2010
right.
at the same arena. And that was the gold medal game. In the Olympics, which he was on the losing side of. So you take those two losses and then you combine that with the state of the Canucks, which was looking like a team that was older, more banged up. They lost a few key pieces, and they didn't have much in the pipeline. You know, he wasn't wrong to think that there were going to be some tough times in it for the Vancouver Canucks. And he, you know, people might say, well, maybe if he stuck around, it would have been different. Like, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think it would have been different. I think time was just up in that cycle for the Canucks, and they were no longer a cup contender. But, you know, it really does sound like it was more on the personal side as opposed to the professional side. Like, maybe he's like, wow, I chased the Stanley Cup, and I let the Stanley Cup be everything that I thought about, right? Like, where am I going to go where I can win a cup? And maybe, you know, sometimes we all take things for granted, right? Like, we've got this person in our life, or we've got this relationship in our life. And, you know, I take that for granted. I want more. I want more. I want more. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you go and get that more, or you chase that more, you lose what you have. And you're like, wait a minute. I think I just lost this trade.
Yeah. And that's, I think, maybe what was going on there in that phone call. It was very cool for Ryan Kesler to join the program. And again, game two, Canucks Preds tonight. Ryan Kesler, famous for the 2011 performance against the Preds here in Vancouver. Could be a very cool night at Rogers Arena. I guarantee you it'll be a real cool night at Rogers Arena because playoff hockey is back. Game two this evening. A reminder, pregame, postgame, and the actual game, it's all right here on Sportsnet 650. Keep it on this station all day for all the Canucks and NHL playoff coverage you could imagine. And we will be back tomorrow morning to talk about it all. But for now, we got to say goodbye. Signing off, I have been Mike Halford. He's been Jason Bruff. He's been A-Dog, and he's been Laddie. This has been the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.